Thank you for purchasing an FRPA educational recording. Please refer to the materials that were included in the confirmation email that you received after you purchased this recording. Those materials include the presentation, which you will want to follow along with, and any information regarding CEU credit.
Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Laura Corey, and I work for the City of Largo. And with me is Krista Pinson, since she's our assistant director. Do you want to say a few words?
You're fine.
Okay. So just so you know, our session is going to be recorded, and it'll be available online for people to view afterwards. So today, our session is going to be about cost recovery. Our learning objectives are the importance of cost recovery when you're planning your programs and pricing them, how you determine your pricing, and then evaluating cost recovery both on the micro level and on the macro level. And at the end, we'll do an exercise so that you guys can get to practice what we're talking about. That's who we are. So. Has anybody heard of the terms cost recovery or have been through workshops before about that? Not a lot. Okay. All right. So basically, cost recovery is the revenue that's going to cover the cost of the expenses for whatever program or activity that you're providing or service. It's comparing your revenue and your expenses, and it's also justifying the cost and the price that you're charging for that activity or service. So we ask why do we even care about having cost recovery? So at the City of Largo, about a dozen or more years ago, about going on 15 years ago now, we started looking into this theory of cost recovery and trying to put into practice, because we were coming on times where we were asked on a regular basis whether we should be providing certain services within our agency. So we started looking inside and looking at what we're offering. How are we pricing them? Why are we offering the activities that we are? So having cost recovery can help answer some challenging questions, and that's what we found in our agency. How will we continue to fund certain facilities and services that we provide in relationship to any budget constraints? I know right now times seem to be really good, but they're really not that good in that in the state of Florida, we're limited as to how much we're still going to get out of property taxes. So even though we may have good economic times, we're still limited. The citywide or whatever your agency is still limited in what we can continue to gain from the positive economic times. So with that, we're still having to be very careful with our funds. Are we using our funding the most effectively or efficiently? And are we charging for our programs and services in a way that supports our mission? So we really need to start with our mission. So as an agency, you want to start with that before you determine how you use cost recovery. And with that, we'll talk about that in a few minutes. And then, are our programs priced fairly? So this is the cost pyramid that we've used. We had training through an agency called GreenPlay, if you have heard of them. They're out of Colorado, and they've done a lot of workshops both here for FRPA and at the NRPA level. So we started by attending workshops, and then we brought them to us, and they've introduced this cost recovery pyramid model to us that uses benefits as a way to determine how we determine cost. So I'm going to go through each of the layers. It's got five layers, and each of them has a way to determine. Where things lie. So at the bottom of the pyramid is where the greatest need or the greatest impact occurs, and that you would want to, in the pyramid, that's where you would want to charge the least. With the most people that are impacted, the least you want to charge for something, because our idea is that we're providing the most impact. And as you work your way up in the pyramid, when you get to the top, the narrower part, that's when you have the most individual benefit. So when it's an individual that's benefiting the most out of the service that you're providing, the idea is that they would be bearing the majority or all of the cost of providing that service. So does that make sense? So I'm going to talk a little bit about the benefits filters. So when you're talking about the bottom rung, where the most community benefit exists, those are programs, facilities, and services that benefit your community as a whole. And examples could be things like community parks. We're not talking about just programs, we're talking about facilities as well. Your special events, but each individual agency, based on your mission, that's for you to determine is what do you feel benefits your community as a whole. And in our exercise, you're going to get to talk a little bit about that in your work groups. Then there's the next layer, and that's your considerable community benefits. So you start with the whole community, and then now you're working into the greater of the community, but maybe not everyone in the community can benefit from those programs, services, and facilities. So they promote some individual benefit, but they still serve a greater good. Things like your smaller neighborhood parks. So a neighborhood park, maybe not everyone in the community might enjoy, but a specific neighborhood is going to enjoy. It still provides a community good. Maybe something like teen programming. In our community, we determined that teen programming, while it provides services to a specific group of our community, it still provides something that's a greater benefit because we're providing them with some structured activities that might keep them out of trouble. Then we move into an individual versus community benefit. We still have a greater community benefit, but there's more on the individual side that's benefiting. Things like physical and mental well-being, they provide an individual physical mental being and provide recreational skill development. So we're not talking about like pro games, but we're talking about your beginner instructional classes, maybe your peewee sports classes, your beginning gymnastics, those kinds of levels. So everyone in the community gets to benefit in that they maybe price so that everyone or the majority of your community is able to afford it, but the individual who's participating in the class benefits the most because they're actually participating. But the idea is that it's offered to the greater community. Then we move up into the chain of a considerable individual benefit. So those are programs, activities, and facilities that support mostly an individual. So they're in a more intermediate level skill development, maybe providing childcare, if some of you do that, like whether it's preschools or after school programming, before school programming, and more intermediate level, like your maybe basketball leagues or your flag football leagues, that sort of thing. Those move up the chain while you're still providing something to the community. Really, the people participating in them are getting that more intermediate, more one-on-one level and enhanced service. Then the mostly community benefit is programs, facilities, and activities that support more of an individual versus a community. I think that should say mostly individual benefit. Sorry about that. So those are more competitive in focus. Your leagues, if you have profit centers, we have a golf course, we have a performing arts center. So to us, those are more profit centers, and they benefit more an individual who's interested in those activities versus having it be a citywide or community-wide service. And sometimes it's something that maybe doesn't fall within your core mission. So you might have some core mission that really values youth and teens or seniors or both, but this is something that's like golf course, maybe not part of your core mission. I'm not saying it's not in the city of Largo. I'm just saying it as an example. So there's other filters, too, that we need to consider. So while we move up the chain of the pyramid, there's other factors within your own individual community that you need to consider as well when you're pricing something or when you're trying to offer something. And that's more of looking and scanning kind of your market. So what types of services or access is there in your community for the particular items that you're looking for, or your services or your facilities that you're considering. Do you feel, or have you defined in your mission if your organization has a responsibility or an obligation to provide that service? Do you have an obligation within your community to provide services for teens, for example? Is there a historical expectation? Have you always provided certain facilities to your community? Have you always provided certain services in your community? And if you change that, or you change how you provide that service, what impact is that going to have? Are you going to have an outcry on your community level? And just because you have an outcry doesn't mean you can't change. But that will determine how you go about making those changes, if you feel strongly because the mission of your agency has changed over the years. And then you also need to look at the impact of providing that service. Is it going to benefit a more long-term? Is it more a short-term benefit? Private sector offers those services? How is that going to impact who comes to you? And then there's a social value element that you want to consider. And social value is something really that's a very subjective thing. It depends on the community that you're in as to what you determine your social value is. So we're moving on. So once we look at those filters, and then we look at the determining and defining where things fall. And this, in Largo, we've spent a lot of time doing that in work groups. And every couple years, we regroup and kind of look at our mission and look at what we're offering and see if they fall into it. We start looking at maybe the more micro level of providing services and using them as a management tools for both our parks and park and recreation managers. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Krista, who is going to deal with the walk you through how we do it and how you can also manage and use the benefits to your advantage.
Okay, so Laura mentioned about 15 years ago, the city of Largo really dug into that cost recovery method. One of the things that we did during that time frame is we took every one of our programming staff and we assigned them a revenue goal. We found that a lot of our programmers were just programming for the fun of it. They really saw no meaning behind it. So initially, the first year, their revenue goal was their annual salary. And I'm going to show you an example in a moment. We have some of our programming staff now that their revenue goal is as much as 4 or 5 times what their annual salary is, just to be able to justify what they're doing and put that meaning behind it. Each of our managers and supervisors turn in a monthly report. And I apologize, we tried to put these on the PowerPoint presentation and you just couldn't read them. So I'm going to pass it around, but it is also in the handouts that you can download off the website. Or if any of you want to drop off a business card, we can email you an electronic version of it afterwards as well. But at the beginning, when they are actually given their revenue goal, we have each one of them sit down at that micro level and determine how they're going to reach that revenue goal. So they turn in an annual plan, and then every month they submit this form as well on how where they are on each one of those programs. They also, on the back side of this, you'll see as I pass this around, the form that they use to actually calculate their revenue goal. So that is turned in again by every manager and every programmer within our department. We also have two cost analysis sheets, which I'll start on the other side. These are used whenever there's a new program that they are doing or when there's a special event, just for them to look at that and make sure that they're pricing their program, that they're covering their costs, and that they're falling in where we would want them to on that pyramid. So when you take a look at how we set those revenue goals, our department revenue goal is $5,483,100. We take that and we divide that, and when our managers submit their annual budgets, they each of them and within their division set a division revenue goal. So for instance, our Largo Community Center, their division goal for the upcoming fiscal year, or the current fiscal year, I'm sorry, is $911,000. So we take that $911,000 and we divide it between the four programming staff at that facility, and then each one of them take that and divide it into individual line items on how they're going to reach that revenue goal. So, for instance, our facility manager, Her revenue goal is $375,000. She says that she's going to make $65,000 off a full-day camp, $45,000 off of memberships for the year, $25,000 off of rentals. We have a very large competitive dance program that's $218,000. A concert series at $12,000 and special events at $10,000. Now again, all of these are goals. We encourage them to stretch a little bit, and that's the reason why we increase their revenue goals and adjust them on an annual basis as well. But all of that adds up to her $375 revenue goal. And then she submits that monthly report every month to show us in administration where she is on that goal. Is there any questions on that? Yes.
How did you start with
I'm going to pass you the microphone if you have a question.
How did you start with a baseline of the revenue goal to like know where you being realistic with the goal in the first place?
Really, all we wanted initially is for everyone to cover their salary. We wanted them to have an understanding of the actual idea of actually bringing revenue back in. And then from there, we saw that gave them the stretch for them to be able to see how far they really did exceed over their salary, and then we were able to adjust it accordingly.
And can I add just one more thing about that too? Is that historically the city itself, city administration, expected a certain amount of revenue overall. We just never knew exactly where all the pockets came together, how they came together. So we started by analyzing every business we had and what kind of revenue that came in from that business. And then that helped us at least that we're being realistic when we're expecting something too.
I will tell you, the first year that we had revenue goals, it was panic. I mean, the programmers, they were stressed. They were all in a sense of panic. You created this sense of internal competition where they were all competing for the revenue. There were a lot of hurdles that we had to get through, but now it really does help. And even some of those event cost analysis sheets, we have our entry-level rec ones that plan some of our special events. And we put that emphasis on that cost recovery even at our entry-level staff. And there really is that priority department-wide. Okay, you want to go into the assignment?
Yep. So we're going to break them into groups?
Yes, if you guys can all break into like just small groups. It's a big group in here. We're going to actually have you guys, we've got some pieces of paper with the cost recovery on it. We're going to have you go through and you're going to put each one of those programs where they would fall on the pyramid and just based on your community. So it may be different, and then we'll have an open discussion on that.
Let's think of the exercise. Do you think it was helpful? I know it's working with other agencies is not quite as helpful, but did you find that you were arguing a little bit more with each other as to where things might fall, or did you feel like you were kind of right on? Some things are easy to tell, and some things are a little bit more difficult. And we had the same kind of battles within our own agency trying to determine and justify. So we're going to take a few minutes and just kind of go around the groups, and we'd like for you to share where you placed certain items so that we can talk about that and get kind of the fuel fire, flowing, and have some conversation about where we think things fall and why. So who wants to be the first to volunteer their ideas? If not, I'll. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, where did you put swim lessons?
He saved you.
Oh, swim lessons, okay. So we put swim lessons in number 2 because we charge a minimum fee for individual. So it's like $4 per person.
So when you say number 2, you're saying here?
Yeah, okay. Number 2 would be that one. Because not everybody have the access to have that money. It depends where they live, I guess. And then for the kids, we charge $3, and then under 2 years old, it's free.
Okay.
So that's the reasons I put it in that level. And then, for instance, we tried to start a yoga class, which was gonna be something new for our park, and then we try a few classes for free to attract people, and that one didn't work for us because I guess that we didn't have the market that wanted to attend the class.
That was a juggling class?
Yoga class. Sorry for my accent.
Anybody else? Yep, back there.
Yeah,
back there. Here, I'll bring you the mic.
Okay, good morning. We discussed among our group, and we pretty much tried to categorize it not based on cost, but based on the pyramid. So at the very top for the most individual benefit, we thought yoga and personal training. For youth flag football and adult basketball, we thought individual, so that would be one, two, three down the pyramid. And then the fourth down the pyramid, we thought senior cards program. And then at the very bottom, which is most community benefit, we thought will be swim lessons, summer camp, 4th of July fireworks, and recreational programming swimming.
Do you want to share a little bit about why you thought some of that?
Well, based on mostly community benefit, meaning that your community impact, the level of people that in your population that you can really impact the most. So with swim lessons, I believe that is more of a safety and not just an individual preference, because you also want to educate and also have prevention as well. So that's what where you have swim lessons. And summer camp, of course, is a very beneficial asset to the community for families. And then the 4th of July fireworks celebration is also a way to bring the community together. And for recreation swimming, it's also a way to expound upon fitness and health, which is a very, very positive initiative that most communities support.
Great. Anybody else want to do?
Oh, right here.
Thank you.
Ours, we had a little bit different for our pyramid. So we did personal training for the most individual benefits. Then considerable individual benefits, we did summer camp, flag football, yoga, basically because of the way that they were explaining on who should be paying for it, like residents who pay taxes, who have a lot of children, versus you have a resident who has no children, their tax dollars really shouldn't be fully funding a camp program, we believe, or a flag football program. That should be, they should be paying more for it, and because your slide said flag football. So we just, that's how we got that one. Then next, for individual community benefits, we did swim lessons, and because we think that's more specific, versus we put recreational swimming in the category underneath it for considerable community benefits. And we also did the senior cards program because that's hitting all of your active adults. So it's not just limiting for specific individuals. And then for mostly community benefits, we did 4th of July fireworks because that the whole community can enjoy that of all age demographics, all that fun. Any other thing?
That's it.
No? Okay.
You can see this is a perfect example of how different communities chart things out in different ways based on the mission of the department. So it's real important to notice.
So I guess I have a question. As far as you all go, were you, does somebody make that decision as to what is considered more of a community benefit, or do you leave that up to the staff to decide, okay, well, I think, you know, fireworks, we staff shouldn't have, you know, and the community shouldn't have to pay for that, so we'll lower the fee, or are you all setting that from an administrative level?
Initially, we did that more in a group setting when we actually had Green Play come in and we took each one of our programs and placed that on there. Laura and I have done a similar session with our staff quite frequently whenever we get new staff to be able to put that back into perspective. But we also to keep in mind who's on commission and where they lay things in that whole factor as well as we're pricing things. Do you have anything you want to add to that, Laura?
Nope, she hit it. While we work with the staff and we do it as a group on a still within administration, a lot of times we'll question if when they do like the pre-event planning and they try to determine pricing at that point, if we feel that that's going to have questions from our city administration, we will regroup and we'll discuss with the employee why they are planning a program where they're not going to generate as much revenue as we feel they should. But for the most part, we try to fall in line with our city's mission and our department or our department mission. We also have a department strategic plan, and as long as we're following where we fall on that, then the staff flow with that as well.
Do we have another group that would like to share where they placed? Come on, I know we have a lot more groups in here.
Aaron, you want to share?
Sure. So our group decided for the mostly individual benefits, that was personal training. For the considerable individual benefit, we had youth flag football and adult basketball league. Number three, the individual community benefit, we had yoga classes. Number two, the considerable community benefit, we had the 4th of July fireworks and senior card program. And then for number one, mostly community benefit, we had swim lessons, summer camp, and recreational swimming.
Thank you. I see a lot of summer camp on the bottom. Or did anybody put summer camp further up on the list? Can we talk about that? Like what your thoughts were behind that?
I think that aligned a little bit of what she was saying as well. Not everyone has children, but also that's your, I don't know if it's a full, if it's benefiting the entire community. Not everyone needs summer camp. I mean, it's a great thing. It would be in a real, like a wonderful world, everyone would have summer camp and it would be wonderful. But, you know, that's a revenue generating program for our department. And we have different tiers of pricing. There's cheaper summer camps and there's more expensive ones, but.
Yeah, I just don't think it belongs at the bottom.
How many people in the room use summer camp as a revenue generating versus community? Okay, quite a few. We do as well, but there are some communities around us where it's almost free just for a community benefit.
Yep. I'll come right back to you. You're next.
I also wanted to add that although we have at the bottom a lot of the items that are most community benefit, doesn't mean that we don't charge anything for them. We do a price analysis based on our surrounding area to make sure that we're competitively priced, meaning that it's really affordable, and also to balance the subsidy. So we generate revenue, but we're also offset by the subsidy that we are provided. So just because it's at the bottom doesn't mean that we're not charging, but we're just making sure that we're supporting our community in a fair and balanced manner.
And yes, you hit that right on the spot, is that balancing that subsidy. So just because it is on the bottom doesn't mean you don't charge at all, but how we price it is how we consider it from the bottom.
We unfortunately do not use summer camp as a revenue builder, but we still place it in that individual community benefit because same reasoning as you had mentioned that it's specific to individual families. Not everyone needs it. We can't provide it for everyone. We have very limited space. So, we kind of felt like it fell into that tier, even though it does benefit probably more the general community, especially our lower income communities that are paying lower fees for the program. But we still felt it was more individual just because it does depend on the person, on if they can afford it, how many kids they have, if they need it, if stuff like that. So,
what do you charge for summer camp?
So we only offer it for 7 weeks. It is a tiered program. If you receive free lunch from our school district for the entire 7 weeks, you pay to 10 for families on reduced lunch, you pay $310, and for families that don't receive any discount from our school district, you pay $410, I think, for the program.
Wow.
We include 3 field trips, a nature field trip to one of our local parks with our park naturalists, their t-shirts, swimming twice a week, the camp challenge.
3 field trips a week?
No, 3 total field trips.
It's crazy.
There you go.
While we're on summer camps, I'm over at a teen center and a skate park down in Delray with City of Delray. Our camp is a little different. It's instructional based. We run a skate camp 8 weeks. We do have a non-resident and a resident fee, and we do offer it on a weekly basis, meaning you're not locked in for those entire 8 weeks. You can come for the week because we have some children that are in private schools. You know, they have to go back early, some, you know, in late. But our field trips are a lot more affordable, so we do offer a lot more field trips because we attend skate parks, and then we also throw in those normal field trips on rainy days, depending on the weather. You know, if the climate's pretty hot or if it's raining, you know, pretty bad, we'll do the movies or we'll go bowling. But mostly our campers are at a skate park, and those field trips tend to be $8 per camper or $10 per camper, so we're kind of are running on a revenue basis because we charge $150 a week for our non-residents, and then we charge $140 for non. So that's one.
We're similar to that price structure. I mean, we're a little bit less. We're right around our average is about $100 a week for summer camp. We charge our non-residents 25% more as a non-resident premium, and we include one field trip a week and then two swimming twice a week.
So we're from Miami-Dade County, and our programs, actually, we have some that are specialized programs for children with disabilities. So in the area of, like, swim lessons, we put a 3 because some are individualized, so private, and we have group lessons as well. And our summer camps are partially funded with grants. So that helps out, but we are experiencing right now a shortage, you know, with the funding, because so many people dip into the grants, and you know, more people are coming aboard. But the grants are always helpful to be able to get those you know, summer camps for considerable individual benefits.
So do you all allow
Yes, absolutely. And we are struggling with the same thing with our summer camp program. We had our juvenile welfare board for our county. We received a substantial amount of money from that, and we lost that program. So now we're struggling to look for ways to be able to fundraise, to be able to offer scholarships and subsidize some of that summer camp for the lower income families.
So we actually both have a question along the same lines. What is y'all's cost recovery? Do you do a percentage, or when you asked your staff to do like 4 times their salary, why did you do that instead of a, say, percentage of you need to recover 75%, you know, whatever the case is?
I'll talk about the revenue goal, Laura, and then I'll let you talk about where our cost recovery sits. So the reason that that right now we have some that are 4 times their salary is because we take at the end of every year, and myself and my supervisor sit down and we look at where they landed with that annual report, and then we stretch them just a little bit further, just so that they don't get too comfortable. We want them to continue to program and challenge them a little bit more.
This program might make more money and this program might make less money, and it averages out?
We don't tell them. We let them go to that micro level. We give them the macro number and say, Laura, your revenue goal is this amount. You tell us how you're going to reach that. And they, you know, we're understanding in the fact that if you have a program that isn't successful, then put a new program in there and add that mid-year as well. You want to talk about our cost recovery for our department?
Sure. So department-wide would include our parks division, and so we run about a 40 to 45% cost recovery department-wide. But on the recreation side alone, and that includes our pools, we're closer to the 70, and athletics, which don't generate a lot of revenue, we're running in the 70% altogether. So $7 for every 10 that we spend comes back in revenue. So that's been, we've been trending up. Because we were challenged about a dozen years ago when the market was dumping come up with creative ways of maintaining what we had and preserving some things. So we really looked deep inside on what we wanted to do and how to price things. and challenged their staff to come up with ideas as well. So since then, we've really things have continued to improve and increase. And so we try to hold that. Sometimes we stretch, like Krista said, we'll stretch them dollar-wise. The expense side of it sometimes also goes up, so the cost recovery rate might still be the same. And we built two new recreation complexes or centers between 2011 and 2013. And so those, their expenses skyrocketed, but their revenue really went up. Like, we went from about a 60 to 65% cost recovery at the community center to pushing over 75%, even with their expenses being as high. Some of it came naturally for people participating, but the staff were also challenged to really make sure that we don't lose, and show our commission that we were very dedicated into continuing to serve the community. More money meant more people participating. So it wasn't always just charge more. It was making sure that you have people coming and using your programs and facilities.
And just to add a couple of things to what Laura just said, I think that really the important thing is that when we introduced this to our department, we also had to introduce it citywide. So even our commission, a lot of them were not familiar with this process, but it's got them to see that we truly see ourselves as a business and how we operate and what we are bringing in on that revenue side. The other thing is when we talk about revenue goals, I just want you guys to all understand that we don't have programmers that are losing their jobs because they don't reach the revenue goal. We do, put that priority on it, and clearly if we had someone that we saw that wasn't even trying, that would be a different situation. But as long as we see that effort and we see that they are planning and actually working towards that goal, that's what the ultimate end result is.
Back to the summer camp thing, we actually run 4 summer camps out of our entirety of our county. We have a community center, which is out in a lower income area, and then we run 3 based out of Brick City Adventure Park, which is where we all are, and all 3 of those have different prices. They all do different things. Some of them are lower income. They still go on a field trip every single day. But it's to parks, things that are going to cost a lot less. And then in the Forest Community Center, where that's a lower income area, they go on 2 field trips a week. We went through the school systems to get free breakfast and lunch. And then we also have a nature-based camp that is just crazy. It's crazy the amount of not only money that she brings in, but just how renowned it is in the area. So with all of that being said, how would you, putting it in the, let me see that. I forgot my question.
Each camp goes into a different level, essentially.
Absolutely. Right. I was just going to say, I would see each one of those camps being classified based on the community that they serve. So it doesn't have to be summer camp as a whole. You can take each one of those programs and change it.
Okay, perfect.
When you guys are talking about cost recovery and department-wide, are you talking indirect expenses and direct expenses? Like the cost of running the facility, turning the lights on, is all that included in that?
Yes, the majority of. We do have some expenses that are not budgeted within our department's budget. So, for example, Public Works will budget certain dollars for emergency-type repairs that might happen, and that doesn't get factored into our cost recovery rate. We use it just whatever the department's budget has in it. Most items are either allocated to our department or we pay for them directly, but there are a handful of things. So like if you really want to get into the details, finance helps service us by running some of our payroll and that sort of thing, and we don't allocate that to our cost recovery rate either.
I have one over here, Laura.
So just a quick question, if there's a way that you guys could tell us a little bit more about your department, because it sounds like you have a lot of staff, maybe a lot of money as well. We're in Sarasota County, and we're more of a venue provider versus a program provider, so you know, we're getting stuff on based on rentals, whether what level. So most of these things are an extension of what we do or would do if we had that kind of staff. So it could show us, like, you know, how many, what's the population that you serve, what's your budget for your department, you know, stuff like that.
Sure. So the city of Largo itself is 82,000 people. So we're a pretty decent-sized community. We're the third largest city within Pinellas County, and we're in a very dense, densely populated county as well. Our budget for the department runs on average without major capital, but like CIP projects, but just regular capital items, runs close to $13, $14 million a year. So that's all for you to determine whether it's a lot of money. In our, we are a full service agency, so we have rental venues. We offer, our parks division is within our department. We do not have library, but we do have a performing arts center. So the library is a separate department within the city. And our city commission has been fairly supportive. But one of the things that we worked hard on, and I would like to kind of mention, Krista touched on it, is that when we start talking about cost recovery and instilling the thought process behind generating programs and how they recover their costs, I don't want to sound like while we do look at certain things as a business, not everything we run is a business, and we're not sharks about it. We do it to build trust within our city administration and our city commission, because we felt like over the years that wasn't there, and we had major issues trying to justify any dollar we needed to spend for a service that we wanted to provide, or we had been providing, but now we're asked to cut the dollars but still keep the service. So we worked really hard over the years to build that trust for our city commission to believe, so then when we do go and ask for additional dollars or additional programs or additional staff, we've done our homework behind what is that going to cost the city, and is there anything that's going to offset the expenses. Sometimes we don't offset it at all, it's just an expense to the city, and sometimes we do have sometimes it naturally offsets itself because of it might be a rental space, and we come up with a way to a formula of how much revenue it should generate.
So just a quick follow-up, you have staff that run your athletic leagues?
Mm-hmm. We do. So, like, for example, athletics is split up, so Krista can talk a little more about that. But like our adult sports, while they pay a fee to use the fields, all of our youth sports, like our little leagues, we're providing, and even we have swim clubs and we have soccer clubs, they use the facilities, but they're not paying anywhere near the cost that it takes to run the facilities. They do pay a small fee because it's of how we've structured some of their contracts, but really the people participating may be paying a fee, but that is going into their club, and their club is paying us a small player charge. But really we're providing really beautiful fields, and the cost recovery rate on that is, you know, 30%. It's really small.
If that,
yeah.
We have a contractual club for our youth baseball, our youth soccer, and our youth swim. All of those are actually contracted out with outside groups. They are required to have one of our department membership cards, so we do get that revenue from that side, and then they pay a portion of our utilities and an athletic improvement fee as well. $15 per child?
It depends on the sport. It ranges from $5 to $15 per participant. And that's for a season. It's not a monthly fee or anything. That's for their season. But we put that money in a special revenue fund, and we use it to make improvements to that particular facility that it came from.
But then we handle all of the maintenance out at the fields as well. It's not, they don't, their organizations do not do that. Do we have any other questions?
Sat down. Thank you.
Laura, since you brought it up, your special revenue fund, how many of your events or activities or programs other than your ball fields and your sports do you have a special rec fund for? And can you accumulate and roll that over from year to year?
So special revenue, we do. We used to call them trust funds, but they are not in the true sense of the word of trust fund. We have close to a dozen special revenue funds. Most of them are sport, are athletic related. So like aquatics, certain youth sports and adult sports. And those are coming out of the improvement piece of it. But we also have, Krista mentioned scholarships earlier. We created a special revenue fund for scholarships. And we do special fundraising. And then we do certain programs where the revenue doesn't go back into the general fund. We roll it right into that trust fund so that we could use it as to provide scholarships for kids to go to our camps. And then we have a smaller scholarship program where you could apply and get, it's a like an Every Child Deserves to Play, where they can participate in some of our monthly instructional programs. So they, if you wanted to try gymnastics and you couldn't afford to pay the monthly rate, you can get a scholarship and have a couple months paid for so that you can at least, it can at least get children to begin participating in some of our programs. But we have most of those, we do special fundraising and sponsorship to generate the dollars that go into those special revenues. But we also have a tree fund, so like our tree planting program, those are impact fees that are generated through permitting. And so we're not tied into how that money comes in, but we do determine how it's being used.
Do you have free programming?
We do offer some free programming. We used to do a lot more when we had outreach sites, but we are working on by free, maybe it's free to the customer, but we're offsetting it in a different way using sponsorship. And then we do a lot of events that are free.
Very few free programs, though. If it's a program, it may have a minimal charge, as low as even a dollar, but most of our programs have some type of cost to it. Last year, we went to member versus non-member pricing, and our non-member is double what our member pricing is. Okay, I think we're just about out of time. So if anybody has any individual questions, please feel free to come up and see Laura and I at the front. And if you do want us to send you those forms in a Word document, just drop your business card up here and we'll do that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys, everybody.